Hello, and welcome to Educational Triage, where we discuss issues in alternative education. This is a discussion about teaching by teachers, for teachers, and others who are interested in the alternative education world. We hope you find today's episode relevant, engaging, and useful. And if you do, please subscribe. I'm Tony Hunt, and I'm here to help guide you with the help of my friends Christy and Philip.
Long dry spell.
Well, yeah, the cockles of my heart are quite charmed. They're in very good shape. Tonight, I'd like us to address the sense of belonging at school, because it seems to be apropos, since we have so many students who don't have that sense of belonging, and they are on the verge of dropping out. They feel like outcasts, whether or not it's because of reasons of sexuality, whether or not it's reasons of interest, reasons of race, or a myriad of other possibilities. And so how do we create that sense of belonging? And I think alternative programs are incredible at doing that so organically, but I'd kind of like to break it down a little bit, because I know that there are probably a few people in the mainstream who would like to know what is the magic pill, if there is one, and taking a look to see what we can do with that. So which of you would like to start us off? Or maybe I should ask a question with, what does a sense of belonging at school really look like?
Hey, I'll start up. That seems to be a great question, because a lot of people search for that. It's very elusive. But it doesn't seem to be that complicated. I think what it has to do with a lot is relationships. If you can make that connection with a student, if you can get them to have a stake in school, the relevance, the relationship, then they get that stake, they get that commitment, they start to understand what it means to come to school, why they should do the work, what it means to their future, and especially what it means to be the present, and they identify with it. If you give them choices along the way, there's an independence in the learning. I liked project learning a lot. I loved outcome-based learning, self-directed learning, that sort of thing. I did a lot of that years back. They had a stake in the learning. You know, I didn't care what they studied, so long as they studied something they were interested in. And that gave them a lot of autonomy too. So it's relationships, really. It gave them a lot of responsibility, but it gave them a lot of identity.
So how do you get them to buy into this? Because they're going to come in with their arms folded across their chests, that look on their face, which is, try me. What is the thing that gets them there? So you have to have a relationship, and it's hard to have a relationship with somebody who is unwilling to, bite the hook.
I used to call that stealth education, actually. It's just a way of tricking them into learning. Everyone wants to learn something. They want to get good at something. And so I would just find out what they like to do, and I'd say, okay, let's do it. If you want to learn that, let's learn it. Let's go after it. What are you interested in? You know, especially the ones that they would have this stake in something, the cockier ones that say, oh, this is what I believe in. It's like, okay, then step up, cowboy. Let's see what you got. You know, let's learn about that. I used to do a research paper, and I had lots of commitment to causes. I'd never let them do, for example, the legalization of marijuana, because it was always a, hey, let's legalize marijuana. And I never let them do things that couldn't be supported very easily, and very, very diverse you know, kind of either or subjects, but they own their subjects. And when they do that, they're passionate and they identify with it. Yeah. Yeah. You get them to own it. It's stealthy, but if they own their education, they identify with it, they flourish as a human. And that's where you get them to learn.
That's wonderful.
All the, it's Christy. Like the, well, it's the buy-in. So it's kind of paralleling what Philip is saying. So the, I like, so the original question was, how do you get them to feel like they belong to their alt-ed?
Yeah, what's the magic pill that alternative ed tends to have where students walk in and they feel all of a sudden they don't suddenly feel it. I mean, they become accustomed and all of a sudden they realize that they are a part of the system and it becomes their system, their ecosystem for learning. How do they do that? What is that? And Philip was saying relationships.
Yeah.
And then through relationships, you're able to get into the stealth learning. Am I correct, Philip?
Yeah, that's fairly accurate. Yeah. You get to know them and then from there.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's like a lot of combinations of, you know, right off the bat is kind of, and it's easy to say to have small numbers, right? Because then you can kind of create that little sense of community or, you know, not necessarily family, but like you can't hide, right? Like you, because if you have 400 kids in your one alt ed program, it no longer is individualized and personalized, right? Now it's, you're back into this monstrous thing where the kid feels lost. To me, like if you were going to ideally set it up, you want it to be small so you can have, you know, be able to develop those relationships between the teacher and the student, which is hard to do if you've got lots and lots and lots and lots of students. And I like what Philip was saying is about the buy-in. If you just throw a whole bunch of stuff at them and they're not interested in any of it, they're not going to be very successful because that's been proven to them in the gen ed setting. So if there's a way to balance, like, hey, like Philip was saying, we're going to do a paper on the Odyssey where they're all like, we're bored. You know, what are some ways that we can find topics that you're interested in? And then you develop a research paper or an essay or a compare and contrast on stuff that you're interested in. So the buy-in is there and they're motivated. I think that's a huge part. And then I think also just going out into your community helps you to build relationships outside of school. So can you even just do small trips to, like, even when I was doing a behavior program, if the class did well and we would set up goals, then we would walk across the street to that our coffee shop, right? Hey, we all did really well. I'm going to treat you guys to coffee. So they can kind of see, hey, I do some work and I'm getting something that's of value to me, rather than like, oh, we all get a gold star. Well, they're like, well, that sucks. Like, this doesn't, you know, but hey, I enjoy this drink, or I get to go get a smoothie. And so they are a little bit incentivized, and it's not this long ending, hey, you'll get a credit in 6 months from now, you get a credit, right? And they're like, this is never ending. So I think having small timelines, and you've done that in your program, instead of working, you chunk your credits, right? Oh, dog, I apologize. My dog just broke in. So small numbers, building relationships, connecting in your community, the buy-in with your curriculum, chunking up the actual academics, I think is super valuable so they can taste success quickly. And I think the other thing that both you guys have done really well is you break down. You're also holding expectations. It's not just a free, you know, cash environment, right? You set up protocols. Hey, this is what it's going to look like. And you do this and we're going to reward you with this, but you're also earning credits and this is the path. And, you know, it can't just be I'm going to chillax here and, you know,
It's always, it was always really important to me that I always treated the students like they could do it. Excuse me. I always talked to them and treated them like, well, it's just a matter of fact, you're going to do it. And they said, well, you know, and they never said to me, I can't do it, because it was always assumed, well, it's going to be done. We're just going to figure out the way to do it. And, you know, we'll get there. And I never, it's, and it was always a product. I never accepted anything less than a B. They didn't know that. I told them I never accepted anything less than a C, but I didn't like Cs, so I never let them get one. I never took a D because a D just wasn't good enough, and there's no such thing as failing. It was either do or do not. Thank you, Yoda. So it's it was a B, and that's what I pushed them toward. That's what I expected, and we just all assumed that was it. And I treated them like adults, too.
Yeah.
And it was going to happen. I knew a lot of adults that were treating kids, even today, and I've seen them in high school. Listen here, young man. And I cringe when I hear that. Or they have a conference and they're talking about a student who's 17 as if they're not there. And I just go, Lord, oh no. And I used to tune and talk to the student directly as if to say, hey, adults, this is a person that's almost an adult. Let's give them the respect, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Expectations. Right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And that active learning that you were talking about, Philip, right? Like they are an active participant in it. Having them passive learning just does not prove as successful in alt ed. They have to be active or else you might be short-term success, but they're definitely not going to be there for the long term.
Well, there needs to be the engagement.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, who wants to go? I know that there are people who love to watch fishing on television. and I don't know how, because it's just not something that I can do. But for some people, there is an engagement that really counts for them. But if they tried to teach me according to their passion of watching somebody fish for trout on a mountain lake, they would lose me so quickly. So I think part of it is you have to recognize what the passion of every student is, not everyone as a whole. You can kind of gauge what it is because you talk about, okay, so what's everybody watching right now? And currently the big thing is Squid Game. And, you just kind of walk in the room and say, who wants to play red light, green light? And they say, no! And then you have their attention. And it's...
Do you say, like, we're going to do Squid Game, red light, green light? And then they're like, what's going on?
No, I don't tell. No, they kind of know where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
So the other thing that I've been hitting them with is, how many of you have watched Midnight Mass on Netflix? Has nobody watched Midnight Mass on Netflix? And finally, after about 5 minutes of this, the kids are saying, are you getting, like, some kind of... payoff every time you say Midnight Mass on Netflix? And so it's become a running joke. And so there are different ways to create a community. And I think one of them is through shared experience, even if it is just a phrase or something like that. Or sometimes I try to do things that are so obnoxious that everybody hates me, and then they try to they don't hate me. They just want to, they'd like to slap me down somehow, not literally slapping, but they would like me, they'd like to put me into a jar and shake it and put it up on the shelf. But I believe that sometimes we have to take each student and sit down with them and just talk and we have what we do first, which is kind of a self inventory. And every student goes through there and they talk about what are values. So we understand that. We talk about, they have to give us an autobiography and do a slideshow that's personal to them. And I have a dog right next to me in case you can hear her.
Yep.
We can hear that.
Mine just left.
I guess the mile and a half hike this afternoon didn't quite tire her out enough. But there are so many different things that we do, and I think when you're talking about, acknowledging the student's the most important person in that room. So when you're speaking with the parent, at least for me, and during conferences, I have the students there, and we're there to build the student up. It's not, little Tommy Thumbsucker didn't turn in his last paper.
Right.
It's Tommy's working on his paper. And we're trying to figure out a way to be motivated. But you know what? Here are the strengths that he has. And just list those off as you can. So the parent feels good, the student feels good, and the conference isn't this incredibly stressful concept that they have to muddle through.
Right.
But because they know that they can trust you. And I think building that trust, I think we need to look at all the different elements of what every student needs. And one of them is they need to have somebody that they can trust and that they can rely on. They need to be able to know that their needs are being taken care of as far as, is there food for them? Is it a warm place? Is it a caring place? Is it someplace where they know that they can relax a little bit? Are they being taken care of, not only educationally, but do people really care about them as a person?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those are the things that we have. Now, there are some teachers in mainstream who are incredible at this.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm just kidding.
Oh, Christy, I forgot about you. I'm kidding.
Fishing for compliments.
funny, you guys are funny.
Oh, there we go. Back to fishing.
Yeah. It comes back to fishing.
No, but you do. You engage the students, you know? And another piece of it is that, and now I've lost my train of thought. It kind of went through the tunnel.
You were saying that the mainstream teachers are very good at this strategy of like getting to know the kid, building the relationships, building the trust. And then when you are pulling them like up, right, hey, come meet me up here. They believe in you and they trust you that you're not, you know, in some form of logic in the high school brain. Like, oh, right. That teacher's not setting me up. They're not trying to trick me or something. Like, I will follow you. Right.
I had a student come into my office this morning and he knew that he was in big, big trouble with me.
Oh boy.
And there was something major that he did not do. And so I said, come on in. So he sat down across from me and I said, you know, I don't know what to do because this is, and I spoke to him as I'm speaking to you. And I just said, this is what your obligation was and you failed to meet it. And this is the second time that you've done that. And if we do this again, then we're going to have to pull mom in. Then we're going to have to talk. And this is not the kind of conversation I want to have about you because I just talked about all the wonderful things that the kid is capable of and everything that he's done and highlighted those. And I said, so let's keep pushing for those things and not the other thing. And he just kind of looked at me with this weird smile. And I said, okay, I'm done yelling at you. And he said, you're yelling at me?
No.
And I said, did you get my message? And he said, yeah, it won't ever happen again. And I said, okay,
yeah,
let's go. Because I think, I don't know, I learn more as I get older. And I just think that a lot of students already have enough people who aren't in their corner and they don't recognize. And I know what it's like to work really hard and have no recognition. And I don't think that our students should have that same kind of feeling.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, that sense, and for so many of our students, not just in alt ed, right? Like school is their safe place. And so it's that delicate threading of the needle of like, you still need boundaries. You still need to follow expectations. We still need to have those areas of being respectful and being responsible. Like that doesn't go away. But I think if you kind of tell them and or show them that these are life skills that you're going to take with you, like that's what I'm building. Yes, the academics are super important, but I'm also teaching you, how do you talk to a grown up or another person when you are upset or you aren't getting your needs met or you don't understand something? Do you cuss them out and be like, I don't know what the F you're saying? Or no, not the way you go about it. Like, here's some strategies, right? Because that's that fight or flight for so many of them.
And it's really important to be consistent. I agree with that too. And when you say something, you have to mean it. So don't just say something. You have to say something and mean it. And when you do call a kid to task, you know, like what Tony did, it's like, okay, it's over. That's it. And they, it's like, well, that's done. Yeah, that's it. You know, the deal is made. Yeah. You know, I said what I need to say. You listen. Thank you very much. And it's over. And you don't go back to it or say, like we said before, you know, it's we said what we said and that's the end of it. And it's very consistent, and they like that. There's nothing hanging over their head. They know what the deal is, and they usually go, okay, I'll do it or I won't.
Yeah, and you follow through. And they know that they have to be able to trust you. They have to be able to trust you. And if you don't follow through and do what you say you were going to do, then they know that you can be had, and they don't trust you, and then they're going to take advantage of you because the respect is gone.
Yeah.
That's why you have to mean what you say, otherwise, because you do have to follow through. Yes. If you do say, if you do this, I will do that, then you must do that, even if it's not as clear as it was before. Yeah.
Right. And I think that there are a lot of teachers who are that way, and kids walk into their classroom and they feel welcome, wanted, and needed. But then that class ends and the kids have to go back out, and they don't want to be at the other places. And it becomes a matter of survival for them. And some of them just can't do it. They just can't hack it.
Yeah.
And I think now we have more kids who suffer from more anxiety.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Their ability to form lasting relationships it suffers. Because they're on their phone so much, and that sense of there's a sense of intimacy that they lack that is really required for human relationships. And I don't mean intimacy as in, that special someone in your life or, you know, your parents or something where you have. It is more like your parents, or it is more like, you know, your siblings for many, or that best friend that you have. It's that intimacy of being able to be alone with each other and just speak about things and share poignant moments of your life. But that's what they're lacking, and they're looking for it. But we can't really give that to them, but we can help foster it. Am I saying the right thing?
You are, yes.
Okay, good. So I went into Black Friday, and this was at Sears just before they closed, and I needed to buy a new bed for the cabin. And I went in there, and I was talking to the woman, and just then five young men in their hoodies, all of them texting. They all came in, and it was like it had been choreographed. They all flopped on beds at the same time. They each had a separate bed. And they just lay there, and they were texting. And the woman walked over there and said, "Yo, get out of here. We are not your flop house." And all of a sudden, they just kind of looked, and they looked at their phones. They looked up at her, looked back at their phones, started texting. And all of a sudden, they all got up in unison and walked out. Still texting. And so that was their, I guess, shared experience, but it's devoid of actual intimacy, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Or was there? It was a little too AI, I think, but yeah. But I think that kids really need to have that, and they don't know how. So I think they get that from maybe being in these situations. We're seeing, I mean, because the way that we have our program structured, we're actually starting to see students working with each other that they normally wouldn't be working with, and helping them and tutoring them and actually engaging with each other, which is incredible. So, and we've seen lasting friendships build just from a field trip. And I don't mean anything like where there's hanky-panky going on. I mean, there really seemed to be a strong friendship that was actually forming. And you're not able to do that in a mainstream classroom, are you?
Mm-mm. Not Christy, in one you period.
Teach a lot. Well, yeah. And Christy, you teach mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever see anything like that happening?
The connections with, I got distracted by your coffee mug. Sorry.
By my what?
Your decorative coffee mug.
Oh, for those who can't see us, which is everybody else, I have a golden, it's a cobalt blue.
Aww.
with a golden retriever.
Okay. That makes sense.
I bought it at a boutique store like 20 years ago.
So, and also for our listeners, when it just flies past the screen really fast and it's bright yellow with a whole bunch of blue on top, I thought it was a Marge Simpson coffee mug. I was like, oh, that's an interesting one.
Marge Simpson. No, it's a golden retriever.
Yeah, same thing, right? So now I apologize. Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
What else do you think students need? I mean, oh, that one. Boy, this is going to be an editing blast.
I know. Sorry. You can keep that one in there.
The question is, teaching in the mainstream classroom, do you ever see students form lasting relationships in that classroom? Do you ever see any moments where there's like some kind of intimacy that's actually, and I don't mean like,
right,
the teenage,
right? No, they've shared sexuality. They've shared a common experience, right?
Right.
Yeah,
that was meaningful.
Yes. And a lot of times it's from, ironically, like the non instruction stuff. I still have kids come up to me. So when we were doing CDL. Comprehensive distance learning. So we were setting goals for our kids because we were struggling to get kids to just turn on their cameras. It wasn't required, but we were just like, hey, wouldn't it be great? You know, that face-to-face stuff. And so we had set, or, you know, how many people will answer in the chat. So we set little classroom goals, and then I would mail home either thank you notes or candy. Right. So they would get some mail, and, you know, it's the only way I could get it to them. And I have kids this year ask me, like, stop me in the hall. Oh my gosh, remember? I'm like, yeah, you know. So just those non instructional moments. And then the kids as well, like, we've got kids who were together in our classes freshman year. Granted, for some of the classes I teach, we meet every single day, so I'm, you know, in 2 weeks I've seen them 10 times, whereas other teachers have only seen them 5. So I'm just exponentially seeing them way more than anyone else will. And so they're together, right, for a long time. And so there have definitely been those connections. Oh, you know, remember Mr. Parnes, he was scared of birds, and they bought him a T-shirt with a big bird on it so that he could have it. They found it like Walmart or something, this huge bird. So he's like, great. And or they asked me about dogs, because I would always say, I would use my dog voice to try and get their attention. You know, and it drove them crazy, but they would remember that. So yeah, those relationships are built, but, you know, it's rare that they come back and be like, remember when you taught me about slow point form? Like, they're not asking about that part, right? Those moments, or in the other classes, oh, they went on this field trip to the zoo. They remember those things. That's the relationship building that they remember. That's easier to replicate in alt ed, because you've got more of those moments, so it's luckier.
Right. And Philip, you talked about the stealth learning. I do remember one time, I think part of it is the fact that it's also consensual. But I just remember working with some students that I had, and they were very high level students in a very high level program. And we were studying biology, and I asked them to choose an animal and to find out everything they could about it and to tell me. And this one young man who I stayed in contact with after I moved on from that program, he looked at me, and this is maybe 2 years later, and he said, "You taught me so much about mountain lions." And I'm thinking, mountain lions? I never taught mountain lions. I said, what are you talking about? He said, remember you had us do that research? And I said, yeah. And he said, that's what I wrote my paper on. Didn't you read my paper? He said, I'm sure I did. But that was a while ago. But I know that I was impressed by what you wrote. I mean, yeah. So, but it was just little, that's a little nugget. And I think that's one of those little golden nuggets that you really have to hold on to, because it says it says that there was something, some element that actually worked for those students.
Yeah. It's so cool too. I did a marathon once, and it wasn't one of my best runs ever. I think I had an injury. I think something went kind of wrong, and it was a limpy sort of thing. And I went, oh man. And I was in the tent at the end of it. And it's like, well, this really is fun and hurts. And this kid came out of nowhere. But he was a kid. He was like 28 or 29 or something. And he says, Mr. Summers. And he starts telling me about how he got into climbing and how he really enjoys climbing, and he lives in the Cascades, and how he starts to climb as soon as the snow hits and works on his skills, and how he learned a lot from the Everest climbs, that I taught in the classes, and he's really working his way up reputation wise. And I'm like, wow. And I was sort of in a daze, and I was just sort of numb for a second, and the pain went away, and I thought, dang, it's a crazy world, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I also remember how you got the kids really interested in your Mount Everest expeditions.
They loved that. Yeah, it was because it was real. I mean, I had world-class climbers communicating with the kids in the classroom. They were keyed. When they found out we were doing that, they were actually sending messages back, saying, hey, we're doing good. This is what we're doing. And the kids were learning technical stuff. And they were asking real good questions, how's your health? How many hours of sleep are you getting? What are you eating? Can you keep it down? Things like that.
And that gives them gives you a launching pad to teach all kinds of things. I mean, you can teach geography. You can teach geology.
Biology was a big thing.
Oh, yeah. What happened? Yeah. You're doing math skills. And that could be stealth learning with the math, and bringing that in.
You could die. If you didn't get the oxygen right, you can die. I made that clear. That's how people died up there.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things that you can do. But I think having something that's intriguing and welcoming, consistent.
And real. Real and applicable. I mean, people do this. You can touch this. You can meet these people. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, there's a king in every crowd. There are people that you walk by on the street that have done amazing things. And you could be one of those people.
King in every crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or a queen. Yeah. Whatever. I mean, whatever it is, there's special things in all of us. And we don't know what that person next to us has done. We all have amazing stories, all of us. And you, and I would tell the kids that, make your amazing story. Be that amazing story.
I think people are worried that they're dull or bored.
I think you're right.
And maybe that's why so many people post everything that they can about their lives online.
Yeah, to give it, it's meaningful if it's online.
Well, it means that other people are recognizing it, and that's why the likes are so important with the dopamine. But, they don't, and there's not that immediate reaction at school. It's kind of like going to rehab, maybe, when they're at school, and that's why they have to keep pulling it out. But I'm just trying to think. The key components, I think, are building relationships. I'm going back to the beginning where we were, that we have, mm-hmm. we talk to our kids about that we're building a family when they come in, mm-hmm. and that they're part of that family and we treat them like part of the family. I find things in my house because when my mother passed, when my mother went into memory care, I ended up with a lot of her things. And I'm kind of looking at those and I'm trying to figure out who to parse them out to, what would make her happy. And she had some of my grandmother's things. And so I'm able to give some of those because some of the kids like those things. And, my nieces might like them, but and then there's things that my dad has. I've given away suits mm-hmm. that were my father's to some kids that needed some of that. And so it's not as though I'm giving them hand-me-downs, but I'm giving them something that, you know, if they don't want it, then they don't have to take it. And if they can really use it. So there is this sense that, well, you're giving me these things. And it's like, well, yeah, well, nobody's ever given me something like that before. So we also do the food boxes. They know that they're going to be taken care of. We're, if you need clothes for your job because and you can't afford those, we will buy those for you. And just the one-on-one meetings where we sit down and we just engage with them. How was your weekend? And they tell us everything. I think that you're not able to do that in a mainstream classroom. I think you can come close where they build a relationship with you, where they can trust you. But the sense of belonging at school can't just be one classroom. Mm-mm. And do you think, but let me ask you this then. Can the sense of belonging at school radiate from, let's say that you have four classes during the day, mm-hmm. and three of those classes, you love those. Do you feel like you belong, even if you have that one class that maybe doesn't quite get you, and you are not involved in extracurriculars, and you really hate lunchtime?
Okay, so this is what you're talking about, the relationships. I keep on getting hit in the head with the redefinition of the three R's, the reading, writing, arithmetic. Yeah, I got redefined early on by a mentor slash boss who redefined them as relationships, relevance, and rigor. And that just replaced them. And so if you have the relevance, I think you can make any class – a kid can own any class that's relevant to them. If you can make it relevant to them, then it's workable. I mean, it's something that they can own and use. If it's a school structure that's not relevant, and I would say most traditional school structures aren't relevant to their lives, then I don't think there's much hope in saving them. That's why alt ed is the hope in saving that. Yeah, you can't build those relationships in a regular ed structure. Therefore, if you do have the rigor and the relevance, you still don't have the relationships. So I would say no. Three great classes, one dumpy class, and a lunch is a junior college experience.
Do you think that the magic pill might be that in alternative ed, it's harder for them to be overlooked and forgotten than in mainstream?
Absolutely. And there's something about there. I was lucky. Maybe I was really lucky, but I to a person for about, I referred to it to a coworker as Camelot. There was like five of us and we were just focused on the kids. And I didn't understand that. I took it for granted. It was the kids first. We even had one staff member that would stop every now and again and go, is it best for the kids? What about the kids? Is it best for the kids? And I used to go, well, of course it is. Yeah, it is. Oh, thanks for asking that. But he did it for a reason. And now I know why. Because I've been to so many meetings since then when it wasn't about the kids. And it was so amazing. And you can't do that outside of a anything above like 30, 35 kids and a staff of three or four that are just focused on them. And I know that people writing up budgets right now are screaming in horror, and administrators are absolutely beside themselves and having strokes and heart attacks as we speak because they're not about the kids anymore. And kids, I mean, they're expensive, aren't they? And we're going to be spending money on kids. Where are we going to get these beautiful green buildings?
Well, I think I agree. I think that you're right. And I think that they've lost sight of the purpose of why we're even in the building.
I believe you're absolutely right.
To serve the students, and the students are there to be served. They are the ultimate client, and we need to do the best job possible.
Right.
Which is why, as in these meetings that I go to, where the administrators have determined that we need to read this book, which is far removed from actually serving the students. And I wish that I could be there for the next meeting to ask them, how is this best for students? And have them sort of waffle and wane. But I'll be doing some other work during that time because I'll be.
I suspect at the there'll National be an explanation with large words and paragraphs and referrals to other books that were came before it, and you'll go, "What?"
No, I don't think that they're capable of that. So,
They don't do that anymore? Okay.
I think it'll just be, I'm not really sure, but I think that that's the direction that we need to start vocalizing when we're in those meetings is how is this best for students?
Yeah, student, right.
And I think, Philip is right. I think that we all need to be doing that constantly because I think that it's so easy to lose the sight.
Well, perhaps that's what the meaning was for that staff member. And I don't know if anybody in the audience here would like to take that mantle up and just occasionally ask during those staff meetings, excuse me, but is this best for the kids? Just wanting to put that sail up so that we're sailing in the correct direction. Is it best? Are we thinking about the kids? I'm not asking anybody in particular, it's just the question we must answer all the time.
Well, and that was one that, I'm super proud of. A lot of schools have this, but ours just got this program. Math is a hard class for a lot of students. And then just like, it seems like it was just yesterday, but it's probably been now 3 years. During our remodel, they were lucky enough to build like a maker space, right? Like they created kind of the equivalent of wood shop, but it's, they're tying it into math curriculum. So it kind of goes right to that question that so many kids ask, when am I ever going to use this, right? Well, by the way, so we're going to learn how to build this, this, and this. And then they also have another class that's like, it connects to the community, right? So you build this sense of community and then you're helping others, but they're building, like they start small and they build like a birdhouse or they build a frame or they build little stair steps and they're learning all the math. Plus they're learning real skills. But it's just that hands-on learning. But it's that goes back to what you're saying, what's best for kids. There's a huge group of kids that struggle to grasp mathematical concepts in this like real algebraic traditional math reasoning form. But when you put tools in their hands and they're measuring and they build it and you're like, hey, by the way, we just learned all about angles and you learned all about like congruent, this and that and these geometric shapes and the areas and bases and da-da-da. They're like, what? But if you had done the exact same lesson in the traditional classroom, they would not have got the connection. So having the buy-in that we talked about earlier and what's best for kids, that's like such a great example of it was best for the kids to learn through hands-on STEM.
Creation,
21st century skills, vocational training, all that stuff. And it's great. And they brought in, we had a math teacher who had the skills, but then we brought in another teacher who that's his background is construction. And so you have an expert in the field. So it's like that co-teaching model that, I'm a huge proponent of. And the kids are thriving in there. And it's a big sense of community because when one person can't figure out how to, make the saw work or the lathe, like when you're smoothing it, not the sander, I can picture it in my head.
The plane.
If they can't make it
the plane, boss.
Yeah.
The plane. Right? Yeah.
So there's that community because they're all in it together and they can help each other out. And it's just really cool. It's a really great program.
That's awesome.
And so it's such a prime example of like, this is how we should be. Mm-hmm. The relevance and
knowledge into action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does actually matter. That
they can translate.
Yeah. Right. And they can see it and they're getting their math credit and they feel successful. And also, hey, by the way, we have to keep our numbers small because we can't have 40 kids in there because we only have space for 20. So, it's all the things we keep saying. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. And it's accessible to pretty much anyone in the school. You just forecast for it and hopefully you can get in. But it's a great little area for for all these things that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, sense of belonging. If there were one thing that you, to finish up, because our time is drawing nigh, if there is one thing that you want to do better with in the classroom, mm-hmm. to enhance the sense of belonging experience from your students, what would that be?
Mine would be to slow down.
What, slow down your speech, the process?
Talk slower. I naturally always like go, 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 go. That's just my personality type. Mm-hmm. And I always feel in school that we are always rushing to teach as much as we can before the bell. I need to cover all this before the end of, before we give you your test. We have to cover all of this before we get to the end of the quarter. Like, we always have these deadlines. And it just seems like we're always in a, we got to take attendance. We need to get through here. You don't have a pencil. I got to help you. And I wish I would do more of like, you know what, let's just take 10, 15 minutes and talk about whatever, you know, what just happened in the hall. Who's, let's talk about Spirit Day. Oh, your jersey. Like, we had a kid who had a jersey, and it was his uncle's jersey. And it's, it had all this, he told me more about it, and it had all this kind of, it looked like Pacific Islander, artwork all over it. And it turns out it was his uncle's rugby jersey, and he was from, you know, Micronesia or Tonga.
New Zealand. He knows the Haka.
And so, you know, if I had just done what I usually do, is like, hey, you got a jersey? Pink, you get a ticket. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then I just keep going. But I was like, I'm going to just ask him, like, can you tell me more about your jersey? Oh, it was my uncle's. Oh, yeah. Why is that important? And I don't normally... I'm somehow turned this into a compliment for myself, but I don't do that as much as I should, right? Like, to take the time and build those connections, because we're always racing, at least I am. So that would be my thing, is to just slow down. And if I didn't get through all the notes, it's okay. I do it tomorrow. I can get through it. But hopefully I built a connection with that one kid when I learned about his jersey that he chose to wear today for Spirit Day. Was his uncle's, and it represents his background and his family. And then it led to the conversation of, hey, we have a Pacific Islander club here. Oh yeah, I'm joining that. Oh my gosh, did you know about the activity you did yesterday? Yeah, we're gonna do this. And he told me about the food they served, and right, so all this stuff. So I know a whole bunch of stuff about this one student in like a 3-minute conversation, that if I just kept going to pass out more tickets, I would have completely missed it.
Much more learning on your part too.
Yeah. Right.
which really releases a lot more endorphins. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Philip.
Incidentally, I spent a week and a half teaching in an elementary school music class as a guest teacher, and I taught them the haka. The haka is a traditional Maori war dance, where the warriors faced off and did this dance of stomping and beating on their chests and making these grotesque faces where they stuck their tongues out and bulged their eyes. And they do it now at rugby matches, where they wear jerseys and they play rugby, and it's the Pacific Islanders' traditional game, and they do the haka dance. And I taught it to fourth and fifth and third graders, and they love doing it. Excuse me. And so it's very deep down there. If you're from New Zealand or Australia or the islands, you know the haka. It's a cultural thing. It's a big deal. And you did great, because the fact of the matter is, schools teach, and it's not about the knowledge. It's not the knowledge we should be teaching. It's the awareness. Mm-hmm. We need to be teaching awareness every day. The deadlines, the content, none of that matters. We'll get to that. That evolves. Life, it's an infinite game. We will learn the math when we need the math. There's right. no 18-year-old time where you just magically appear out of your chrysalis and fly forward an adult and nevermore make a mistake, nevermore an incompetent, nevermore ignorant. No, of course, we bumble our way through life and wonder how we've made it this far. The fact of the matter is schools do a poor job of equipping us to go through life. What we really need to do is teach that awareness. And you stopped and you did that. Tell me about the jersey. Yeah, it's a rugby jersey. And he probably, if he had asked more, would have told you, or maybe even done the haka. And the haka actually now has been accepted as an endearing dance, which means we are a group, a strong group. And if you look at it now, go to YouTube, and I suggest you do. There are these men who are just chunks of muscles with heads, you know, that the Rock would walk up to and go, dang, you're big, you know. There's also a wedding where the wedding group, men and women, start doing the haka at the groom and the bride and say, you are us and we are you and we have you. We protect you and you have us and we are community. We are Ohana, family. And then the bride, you know, she stands up and does the haka and the groom does it back and the group does it back. And then they, you know, the bride cries, you know, it's so touching. It's become sort of an endearing Pacific Islander tradition. So what you touched was just the tip of the iceberg, the awareness. That's what we need to teach. And that's what alternative ed teaches. The awareness. Yeah. And we get to the content secondarily. We get to the human first.
Thank you. I think for me, I would work more on listening as I speak. And what I mean by that is I'm trying to do double duty here because I've got Autumn trying to jump into my lap while I'm talking. I was listening to a student talk the other day, and I began to wonder because it went on and on and on and on, and then you thought she was going to be finished, and then she continued, and it was like a cascading waterfall, and it just never seemed to stop. And I thought to myself, do I do that? And so
way through it.
I kind of catch myself because I know that it may be distracting to students, and I would prefer to.
Yes, dear.
It may be better for me to let them do more of the talking than myself. And when we're doing the learning, it's listening for everything, and it doesn't mean just the words. It means the actions.
Right.
It means the body position, everything. Yeah. And I think that what both of you mentioned are incredibly important. And I think those are really good things. I wish we had time so that we could cover more, but we really are out of time.
I want to thank you.
I would like to thank our listeners. And if you can, make sure that you're subscribed and that you refer us and that you shout back at us and give us some comments and share us on Instagram, share us on Twitter, share us on Facebook, wherever you are. We're here for you. So give us feedback, ask us questions, give us ideas of what you would like us to talk about. And we will see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye-bye. I want to thank you. I would like to thank our listeners. And if you can, make sure that you're subscribed and that you refer us and that you shout back at us and give us some comments and share us on Instagram, share us on Twitter, share us on Facebook, wherever you are. We're here for you. So give us feedback, ask us questions, give us ideas of what you would like us to talk about, and we will see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Bye.